I'm very well. I am Tim Arcuri. I'm the semiconductor and the semi equipment analyst here at Cowen. Very happy to have Applied Materials with us. Bob Halliday, CFO, and Mike Sullivan, IR. Applied is, you know, there are a lot of semi stocks that have done well recently, but Applied has almost tripled off the bottom. It's been a great run, and I think it's going higher from here. So we're going to have Bob make some comments, and then I'll ask some questions.
Sure. Maybe I'll just give you some context about Applied and our markets and business. Applied's been around 50 years. I've been at Applied almost 4.5 years. Gary Dickerson, the CEO, has been there as CEO a little less than 4 years, as president about five. And it's been a lot of fun. We were at Varian prior to that, where we went up sort of 6x on the market cap. Here it's almost 4x for Gary. It's about 3.5 for me. I got here a little after him. A lot of fun. A couple of things driving us. One, the markets are pretty good. We think semi market and display business are both really strong markets. We're in both. I think we're in record market conditions this year. We think next year's strong too, might be stronger. And then our position's increased. We've got a really robust product pipeline, so we've been gaining market share in semi and display. And then our services business, which a lot of investors are very attracted to, used to be at about $2 billion a year, flatlining. It's been growing at about a compound rate of growth of 10%. And another thing people don't quite see is the total corporate gross margins used to be at 40.9% in 2012, this year about 46%. Our gross margins are up in every one of our business units from 2013. In our 10 semi business, every one of the gross margins up. In our display business, our service business, our operating margins are up across the board. And as I said, our product positions in share are strong too. So we're pretty optimistic about the future too.
Thanks for that, Bob. So let me first, I'm going to actually break my questions into the different product groups. So first on SSG. And I guess this is, you know, this is sort of relates to the overall company as well. But you're on track to do maybe $9.5 billion this year in SSG, something in that range, versus your 9.1 that's in your model at $37 billion WFE, and you're at roughly 80 cents a quarter, which is basically in line with your 317, you know, high end of your model. So. I know that you're not going to raise the model now, but if WFE is up again next year, as you've said, can you help us think about how the model will scale? And I guess, you know, I sort of get 350 to 360 worth of earnings power if WFE is going to be in the low 40s. So can you sort of help us
Sure.
think about that?
Yeah, so we're having an analyst investor day end of September in New York. So we'll do a model then. Probably I'll talk to the levers on the model more than the actual numbers today. So if you look at the levers on the model, it's sort of the revenue line, the gross margins, operating margins. And if you look at the revenue line, we have three big revenue generators. We have a service. It's growing about 10% a year. So the model we put up last year for 2019 fiscal year, we put up last September, as Tim said, in a $37 billion WFE environment, said we would earn, I think, $3.17. The environment today is a little north of $37 billion. It's probably around 40. And if you look at it, the market share we put up in that model for SSG was 25.5. We were about 22, slightly under last year. We gained about 2 points. We're going to gain some more share this year. We think we'll gain share each year up through 2019. So if you look forward to semi business next year, if the market's up, we'll gain share again too. So the lever on semi business next year is if the market's up, the market's bigger, and we probably get a bigger percentage of that market next year. So revenues would go up. If you look at our display business, what was in the public domain, that business, which was about $560 million in revenue in 2012, I think it was, we booked over $2.1 billion last year. We've said on the call that we'll book over $2.1 billion this year. We only had revenues of about $400 million last quarter because the tools take about a year from booking to ship and revenue. So that business will scale up next year too. So the display business will grow a fair amount next year also. So services, kind of a 10% growth rate. Display could be up a good amount next year. And semi, if WFE's up and our shares up, will grow next year. In terms of the gross margins, we were 43.2. We were 40.9, 2012. Last year in 2016, we were like 43.2, I think. This year, we'll be about 46. Mix constant, we could probably grow gross margins about 7/10, three-quarters of a point a year. This year, mix has been a little beneficial because it's been a strong semi year, and semi margin's a little higher than display and services, even though the operating margin delta is not as big because the R&D bill isn't as big for service business and display as a percentage of revenues. So if mix stayed constant, gross margins could go up next year. I think mix is a little unfavorable next year because I think display outgrows semi a little bit next year on gross margin line. And then if you look at OpEx, the company's only grown OpEx from 2012 to 2016 at 1.6% compound rate of growth because we cut G&A 30%, and we moved it into R&D. And the effectiveness of R&D has almost doubled in terms of new product generation. So next year, I think OpEx probably grows more than that because we're in a strong environment. We're investing a little more in the products, but there'll still be good leverage down to the operating margin line. The quarter we guided to, we're up at 28% and change on operating margin. The model at $37 billion was only like 26.5 or something. So we're kind of ahead of the model on virtually every line: revenue, gross margins. The gross margins in the model at 37 were only 45.1, and we're at 46 this year. And then operating margins were 26 and change. We're at 28 this quarter. And then EPS was $3.17, and we're kind of running that level now. So we're kind of about 2 years ahead on the model. And just for historical reference, I hate to tell you, the 2015 model we set up for 2018, we basically hit last calendar year.
Yeah.
So we got to model better.
$4. What? So one thing that's been really, I think, very, very good has been your op margins in SSG. You're in the low 31%-33%, roughly. I mean, granted, revenue's high as well. But if we're going to do 9.5% this year and next year, if WFE's up again and you guys gain share, we're talking about sort of a sustained $2.5 billion a quarter. Maybe it's $2.6 billion a quarter. I mean, you're going to be in excess of $10 billion next year based on the math.
Revenue-wise.
So is like a mid-30s op margin just in SSG, is that a sustainable number, or are there some unique things about the last couple of quarters?
Depends on mix. I think the margins, op margins in SSG can trend up, but the mix can make it a little bumpy. Our TIG businesses, which is a little bit more foundry-centric, although they are now about a third of their revenues are now memory. It didn't used to be that high. They've grown a lot in CMP, EPI, PVD, implant, have all grown in the memory side. But the point is, on the gross margins and operating margins in TIG, I mean, in semi, trend lines up can be a little lumpy. If you ask me if mix stays constant next year, they'd probably go up. And do they get to mid-30s? That's a pretty big number, but they're trending up.
Okay. One thing about Applied that I think people don't probably fully get that's changed is that you used to be over-levered to foundry, and it really used to be as goes TSMC, as goes your SSG business. And that's really changed because you've gained lots of share in memory. So can you talk about maybe what your share is in memory and in foundry? Because the memory share, I don't think people get how much share you've gained in memory.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it goes to a broader topic, and I'll touch on. Michael can jump in. I actually think we've de-risked the company. Let me tell you what I mean by that. I think that if you look at our markets are better than people used to think. It's like the old Miller Lite commercial: "Taste great, less filling," right? The markets are growing better than people think, and they're less volatile. I mean, there's a lot of data that supports that. And in the display business, it's significantly growing, and we have line of sight that orders of equipment for display for televisions, which are getting bigger and bigger, and mobile phones, which are going more and more to OLED and more capital-intensive, is going to be good pretty confidently through 2021. So in terms of the risk of the markets, I feel pretty good. And then if you look at the business, we have got three big businesses. We've got the semi business, display, and services. Service business, which used to be flat at $2 billion, is now a $3 billion business growing 10% a year. And if China chugs in and year out, growing, right? Then if you look at display, which used to be a small piece of business, and many people said when we showed up, "Get rid of the display business," we believe that that business is good, and that market's more than doubled, and our position's gonna double again in that business. And that's a somewhat different business than the semi business. And then if you look at semi, people used to say, "If it's a good foundry year, buy Applied. If it's a good memory year, don't buy Applied." Our share's up a lot, over 52%, I think, of our revenues this year are memory. If you look at our TIG business, which is foundry specific, I think about 33%-35% of our business is memory, and PPG is a lot of memory. In 2012, here's a statistic, our overall share of WFE was about 18%, but we were in the low to mid-20s in foundry, under 14% or 15% of the WFE share in DRAM, NAND, and logic. We are now 22% this year, minimum, in all three of those, and gone up some more, a little bit in foundry. So if it's a good foundry year, good for us. If it's a good memory year for us, 'cause a lot of our share gains have come in memory. We've grown at 50% faster than the market.
Yeah.
I don't know, Michael, if you wanna add.
No, I agree. And another way you can look at it is, you know, if you looked at our revenue, you could say 60% of our revenue are in leadership areas where we have very, very high share in transistor enabling and also our services business. And the other 40% of our business is very rapid growth. We've been growing in the 20% compound in display and also in the memory enabling businesses like etch, CVD, CMP. So we've got a lot of high growth businesses where we're gaining share and these very core businesses where we're growing at a steady rate, but they're very protected businesses from a technology perspective.
So the way you make a company more attractive financially and try and de-risk it, you try and get broader markets and penetrate the right markets. That's a market de-risking. Then you try and de-risk your products. You try and get share and winning products and better visibility into the customer requirements. So we've increased the technical guys in the field by 65%. So we know what customers require sooner. That drives the share gains. And that's driving the product line. The third way you de-risk a company is you change your financial model. We've changed the financial model. So if you go look to 2012, 55% of OpEx dollars was to SG&A. Today, 55% was to R&D. Today, it's 65% to R&D. 45% is now 35% to SG&A. But wait, it's more than that. 'Cause buried in SG&A is technical marketing guys in the field. We call SG&A, but those are guys like R&D. And those guys have gone up 65%. So the fixed cost structure in G&A has been slashed. Every G&A organization went down 30% in real dollars. We flattened out organizations. And then if you go to the manufacturing cost structures, our absorption levels are much better than they used to be. Our material cost reduction is getting twice the rate of cost reduction we used to get. So in terms of making this a more attractive financial business, the markets are better, and we're attracting the right products. The products are gaining share in the markets, and the business model, the financial model's changed. So our ability to generate cash, we're gonna be north of 20% free cash flow for the sustainable future.
Yeah. And Tim, to your point, you know, if we looked at semiconductors, so we're now, you know, number one by revenue, whether it's DRAM, NAND, foundry, or logic, it doesn't matter.
And then the cash thing, just to drive a stake through this thing, the last five years, we've returned 105% of free cash flow to investors. The last 10 years, 89%. Last 17 years, 96%. So we generate a lot of cash. CapEx is equal to depreciation. We generate a lot of cash.
You know, it's, I mean, it goes without saying that it's been an amazing transformation since, you know, you and Gary got there. But it seems like the product pipeline, it, that, you know, we've seen some new products, but there's a host of new products that we haven't even seen yet. So can you sort of talk about, you know, not sort of pre-announcing what they are, but can you talk about what the sort of special sauce is that's in that new product pipeline that's gonna allow you to continue to gain share?
Sure. So if you look at it, we're still pretty medium early innings on stuff we've done in etch, CVD, ALD, and e-beam inspection. So if you look at it, we've introduced two really big new products in etch the last few years, the Selector product, which is great for deep etches, good for aspect ratio stuff, and the SIM3. and selector, which you can actually remove materials horizontally, not just line of sight. So if you think of a V-NAND device where you stack this up vertically, getting SIM3, which does this deep vertical etch, very precise and good aspect ratios, is a winning product. And if you think about staircasing and these stacking these layers, a selector product. So it enables you to go to above 32 layers, 64 and above. And then we have new products in CVD to help that growth in NAND. And then they've added an epi steps in NAND too. So our product pipeline, I think we're still in the pretty early innings on etch, CVD, ALD, and e-beam inspection. So if you look at inspection, more and more customers are using e-beam versus optical inspection. And we went from 0% of that market to 27% of that market last year. 2 years ago, it was zero. Last year, it was 27%. And we're going to continue to grow share. And the TAM is growing pretty rapidly in that market. So inspection, the TAM is growing for e-beam, and our share will grow. We'll grow share product positions around etch, CVD, ALD. And then in display, we have new product pipeline come out later this year. And then other products we don't talk about as much because not so much U.S. companies focus on it, so there's not as much dialogue going back and forth. But we've gained 10 points of share in CMP, which we're up over 70% market, and our revenues there have gone up like 2.5 times since 2012. Michael, you want to add?
Yeah, it's, you know, if you talk to, you know, Gary, our CEO, you know, we talk about using materials in new ways to enable devices that you could never imagine before, new techniques. And so what's happening is for the customers, you know, whether it's in logic, foundry, memory, the way you keep advancing Moore's Law, it's become harder and harder and a lot more capital intensive. So what do you do about it? And so what we have are more chemistry capabilities, more engineering capabilities inside the company. And we can put together the different things that enable a module, you know, the deposition, the etch, the inspection with e-beam, put all of those together, come up with new materials that people haven't used before, and with that, enable people to think about how they can do patterning. For example, now that, you know, lithos run out of steam in terms of optical lithography, it's run out of steam. So how do you pattern in the future? We have techniques that our customers are working with us. There's a lot of pull from them to work earlier and deeper on these things. And we have an experimental fab in Sunnyvale where they can try out these on real 300 millimeter wafers. So all of the traction in these areas is growing a great deal.
Yeah, you see more and more, Michael makes a good point. It used to be customers bought products primarily around product specific by the individual tool type. Now they're buying these whole modules where you integrate solutions. If you look at some of our big chamber-based tools, we might have 18 different chambers off one tool. You might have PVD, CVD, ALD, RTP, and pre-clean, because they want device performance to do better, and by integrating the steps and never taking out a vacuum, you get better performance. So these integrated steps and working with a company with a breadth of products we can integrate along the module concept that Michael says is really effective.
Maybe one more question on SSG, then I'll shift to other verticals. But you were pretty clear about what to expect in SSG for the fiscal fourth quarter, so roughly flat, give or take, with the fiscal third quarter. I personally still have some confusion in terms of what to expect for your fiscal first quarter. I think there's some maybe some worries. I mean, you wouldn't know it from the stock, but I you know, do get lots of questions about will there be a shipment fall off in the fiscal first quarter, which is the calendar fourth quarter. Do you have any any, you know, visibility into that quarter to say that things will not fall off much?
Yeah, our visibility is kind of, 0 to 6 months. We tactically have to get pretty good forecasts from customers so we can build those tools. It's kind of 6 to 18 months. We start to talk more about things that are driving overall demand. Specific unit forecasts, 6 to 9 months, which is sort of like Q1 of fiscal. We have sizing, we don't have specifics. So if you look at 0 to 6 months, we gave you on the guide pretty much to the end of the fiscal year, which is to the end of October. Our sense is our fiscal and calendar 18 is a pretty good year. We think it's up to, you know, I think it starts with a 4, as we said on call, 40-something number next year. And we think the drivers for next year are, we think DRAM's probably up because it's not that big this year. Pricing's good. We think the NAND spending sustains pretty healthy. Logic's probably up $1 billion. And foundry, we think, is pretty good because it's trailing Edge is big, and certain customers haven't spent money this year. So we think next year is good. In terms of Q1, fiscal 2018, that kind of falls between, hey, give us a tool you'd account forecast and tell me longer-term drivers when you work with customers. And frankly, customers give us a lot of visibility in 0 to 6 months. They don't give you as much visibility in 7 to 12 months because they kind of don't want their competitors to know when they're adding capacity.
So fiscal Q1 shipments down maybe, but you just don't have a lot of.
We don't know.
Visibility into that.
We don't know.
Okay. Let me ask a question about display. And you have talked lots about your SAM growing in display, growing from 15% today to 40%-45%, looking out a couple of years. Yet you've not announced new products to basically get you there. Can you sort of level set us on when what the first year will be that you'll be serving 40% of the SAM? Will it be the end of next year run rate such that 2019 will be the first year in its entirety that you're serving 40% of the SAM?
So we've said we will announce new products this calendar year and probably fiscal year. And then we will serve, I think, close to 40% this year. Now, what is the definition of served? Served will mean we have a product that we can sell. But in terms of selling and having significant share in it, it won't be that big because the lead times on these, you got to qualify at the fab, and then you have to build and ship it, which takes like a year. So we should probably grow revenues in there in 2018 and more in 2019, but there's a lead time to getting all those revenues. I don't know, Michael, you've spent a lot of time in display.
No, I think that's right. Yeah.
So I think we will have products available that could sell for up to 40% probably this calendar year, but you just won't recognize that type of revenue because it takes a while to ramp it.
Got it. Okay. Then in display, the model embeds $2.1 billion for display revenue. I mean, it's very, very low, obviously.
Thank you.
But if you're serving 40% of an equipment spend that's in the mid-teens billion, roughly, I mean, the math is not that hard to get to $3 billion plus, and that assumes that you're only doing like 50% share, which now you have much, much higher share than that. So you'd have to get a really low share on the incremental stuff that you're about to announce. And it seems like that's pretty differentiated, possibly some of the things that you could do. So it seems like two in the model, it seems like three is probably like a more realistic starting point. And it's possible that it could even be four if you get good. And I'm not trying to push you to four, but I'm just saying that there's easily $1 billion incremental in your model for display, probably more because you wouldn't be announcing these new products if you didn't think that you could get a significant share in those markets.
Yeah, I think the circa 2019 model we put last year, we probably can surpass that in virtually every line of the P&L. We're pretty much there now. I think in display specifically, we're probably more optimistic than we were even last September. I think it's a combination of products and markets. The specific number we'll probably put out this September, but we will drive our organization to get bigger numbers, and they'll be bigger, I think.
And these new tools that you're going to announce, there's existing suppliers in those markets by and large, and they're probably Japanese or Korean. So in terms of the share, I mean, it's sort of a hard question to answer given that you haven't even announced what these products are. But in these new markets, is your expectation that your share is going to be similar?
Not initially. Our share in existing products is about two-thirds now. We won't get to that share for the foreseeable future on the new products. But we do think the differentiated products, they should have strong share, but it won't be in 2018. Takes a couple of years to grow it.
But those tools, take, you know, for instance, this new Samsung fab being built, when they book for those lines, they could, the new tools will be available for them to order for those lines, which are going to start to accept tools, you know, first calendar quarter next year.
It would be, you know, I don't want to be too specific, but it would be hard for us to ship much volume on a brand new product early in 18.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any audience questions?
We've de-risked the audience.
Right. You know, Tim, maybe I can come back to one thing. You were asking about the shipments in calendar Q4 and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, one thing to notice is it's interesting to take, the, you know, kind of that granular view and miss kind of something that's a little bit bigger. If you think about it, you know, wafer fab equipment spending from 2000 through the year before this year, the highest it's ever been has been about $35 billion. And now we're talking about, you know, a much bigger number, right? We're talking about a 40. And if you look back at when you hit around 35, usually the next year you'd be down 24% on average. So what's really interesting is that we're breaking out to a new level that's higher than anything that ever existed before, and we're not expecting a downturn right after that. We're expecting it to stay strong. So it really, you know, should, I think the question we should be asking is, why is it so high and why is it sustainably higher? Because that's going to have really big implications for the company and the industry.
Yeah. Can I add? So, can I pile on that one? I'm sorry. Okay. So we sell equipment. So three fundamental things drive equipment. A, do they need more capacity? B, do they have technology conversions? And the third one a little bit is some government policy that's spurring demand. Now, within capacity, you have to subsegment that. Do they need to make more wafers and chips? And two, is manufacturing those chips more capital intensive than it used to be? It needs more equipment to make those chips. So if you look at demand drivers, in the 0 to 9 month window, we can point to specific things that are okay. Utilization's good, pricing for our customers is good, all that stuff. We have big demands, we don't think we're double booking. In the 9 months to kind of 24, 30 months, I can put in DRAMs up next year, NAND's sustainable, logic's gonna spend $1 billion more, and foundry looks okay, particularly in trailing edge. If you look longer term, now I'm a little bit further out, you go look at how much data is being generated, how much is being utilized, how much more applications are out for devices. It's probably going to grow. There's a bunch of things that could be nonlinear for us, right? Which is A, the volume of data is going to grow a lot. So memory and processing that data is probably going to go up. Two, they're only utilizing a small percentage of that data. If they start to value and utilize more, that's nonlinear. And remember, we're the CapEx guys. We add capacity. We're a second derivative. So if that stuff all grows, drives chips, you add more equipment. And think, I'll give you a data point you might not have internalized. Capital intensity per device type's gone up across the board to make the same number of chips and wafers, okay? If you go in foundry, for instance, from 28 nanometer, because you might ask me to compare 28 to 7, 28 nanometer to 7, the capital intensity is up around 85% to make the same number of wafers, okay? From 20/16 to the average of 10/7, it's up over 40%. So we sell equipment. So if some of this data stuff, utilization data stuff, 5G, you look at video streaming, how much more video is going, packaging, DRAM stacking, those are pretty good things. As Michael said, you go talk to almost anybody in the sell side and buy side, everybody kind of agrees this year's $40 billion. And mostly everybody agrees next year's $40 billion or so. That's never happened before. Okay?
Can you help me understand how the, given what you were just saying, how the competitive dynamic of share shifts can occur? Is it, it sounds like with the legacy business, or not legacy, but the businesses where you have an install base, it's hard to lose share there unless you just have an inferior product, I guess. But is it really on the new end market is where the share shifts?
You have to go up a step or two. So it depends on how they make chips, right? Mm-hmm. So what they're doing for years, the way they made chips was make them smaller, and then they're better, faster, cheaper. But just shrinking them in two dimensions, you got contact resistance problems, you got technical challenges, you got cost problems, patenting problems. So more and more they've tried to change and go to changes in structures, go vertical, release that stress on a two-dimensional model, and go to FinFET, which gives you more contact resistance, like a fin on a dorsal fish. That's logic and foundry. And NAND is stacking up like apartment buildings where the feature size is bigger, but they went vertical. So that's about structures and materials. So if you look at the data, where we compete in 2012, 53.5% of customer spending was where we compete. This year, it's 63.5%. And that's benefited companies like ourselves and Lam and Tokyo Electron. The guys who have gone down as a percentage, frankly, are litho, track, clean, MOCVD. Okay? It's more about deposition etch. The second thing that's happened is, as customers have gone to more mobile and bigger customers, there's three challenges to support them. Can you support them on product development, technology, big R&D bills for us, big manufacturing ramps? The manufacturing ramps are three times as steep because everybody wants a new phone for Christmas. And three, the service requirements are big. And now you have people going to China. So the other loser has been the little companies. The little suppliers in Korea, Japan have lost share to the big guys because of the capability model, right? So that's helped the big U.S. guys who do deposition etch, including us. And then within those specific wins, you try and get new applications so that, you know, it's about value creation, not about discounting, right? So that's how you move the needle. So where we compete has been better, particularly because we've subsegmented where to target our products, including display. And the changes in the devices have benefited us, and we've had a really good product cycle.
Yeah.
Sorry, long-winded answer.
Can I would feel remiss if I didn't ask a question on service, which is
whenever somebody says I'd feel remiss if I didn't ask a question, I don't know if I'm getting set up.
You're not. You know, since Ali took over service, I mean, it's been a story that probably doesn't get enough.
Yeah.
Focus, really. What has changed in service? What has he changed? What has the company changed in terms of how you think about service that has caused it to, you know, it sort of used to be this business that just didn't grow, and I, you know, wasn't sure why it didn't grow, but it didn't grow as much as it should. But, you know, now it's growing even more than I thought that it could. And so can you talk about what he's done in that business to really make things take off?
Yeah, Ollie's the general manager of service and display business, which both done great. And his team's done a great job. So within that band, they've done an incredible job. And what they've done is they've focused more on service contracts, which are sticky, versus selling ad hoc parts and labor, okay? Because if you think about it, when you install a new tool, you basically own 100% of the service that day because it's under warranty for a year or two. And then typically the first year out of warranty, you own a high percentage of the service content, labor, and materials. But customers will sometimes self-service with their own workers or buy parts directly sometimes. So if you get customers to commit to a service contract while it's being sold or under warranty, you retain that service business. And it's good for the customers because we make it attractive. We provide really high-quality service, and we've added value to those service contracts. So within the service organization, in my opinion, they've done a great job on execution and changing the strategy to focus on added value in service contracts. Somewhat broader, what's also helped them is we have emphasized to the whole company, including the equipment guys, you need to help the service guys sell service because they're the first point of contact with customers. So we actually changed the bonus plan for the equipment guys. A significant percentage of theirs is helping service, and the service guys help the equipment guys. So we've optimized globally across the company too, and that was sort of a management philosophy change. And then the third thing that's helped us too is, you know, in all honesty, Applied was losing share of WFE. Now we're gaining share, right? So the opportunity set's bigger. So it's been great execution and strategy within service, optimized across the company in a share gain momentum.
So Bob, this is going to be a very direct question.
Can I give you a waffle for an answer? I don't know.
So your stock is sitting at $45. It's been one of the best performers in semis. What do you think at this price, people are still missing. And for a big long only to get involved, they have to believe that it's going to 60 or 70 or 80
sure.
or 90 or even $100.
Sure.
If that were to happen, what is going to take it?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think. So when you buy a stock, I took a lot of finance stuff when I was a kid. Basically, the value of a stock is equal to how fast it's going to grow, its revenue, profit, and how risky is it? What discount rate do I put on it, right? So I think people have underestimated the potential to grow because they say, hey, it's a $30 billion no-growth WFE, and I don't understand display. So first you have to say, we make money and you pay for it on four levers we have. One, are we in the right markets, particularly how we segment? So markets create value. Are you in a good market? B, do you have winning products to gain share in the market? Three, do you have attractive business model? How much drops the bottom line? And fourth, how do you do on tax, leverage, buybacks, all that stuff, non-operating things? So I think investors will start to realize, I guess this market is growing better than I thought, and display looks pretty damn good, and maybe it's not so volatile. So maybe it's like the old Miller Lite, tastes great, less filling. Hey, it grows better and it's less volatile, right? So that'll work its way into investors' consciousness. I think the sell side spends a lot of time on this, has kind of come around on that. And they're coming around to display as they spend the time on it. So the markets are more attractive. Growing better, less volatile. That's pretty good. So the growth rate's better and the risk is a little less, the discount rate, right? Then you look at the product position. We have big moats around some of our products. We have very high share in some of these products, and our service business is big. So like 60% of our business is big barriers to entry, right? And then 40% we gain share, and those are really attractive businesses, right? And including some of the display and semi. Mm-hmm. So then when you look at the company's execution around products, pretty attractive. Then you go to look at business model. We really can't recast the business model, and we generate a lot of cash, right? So then investors will come around to, in my opinion. Now, the three things that will be important for investors, in my opinion, is first, is this business, including its markets, attractive? Two, does it generate a lot of cash? And three, do you give me the cash back? That's the proof statement, right? So people, when I tell you we've given back 96% of free cash flow over the last 17 years, people don't think of that, right? Because it's not a dividend. They say, a dividend I can be sure of. I can't be sure of buyback. We haven't put in a high dividend for a couple of reasons. The stock has run up and we bought back a lot. Two, we have a complex tax structure. If they do tax policy change and we have free access to the foreign cash, we'll commit to a high dividend probably, right? So then what's going to happen, we're going to screen. And we're going to screen on your filters on dividends and buybacks and the cash flow. And people are going to look at it closer and say, geez, we've got another year of good market. Geez, we've got another year of high margins. Geez, we've got another year of free cash flow, and I got a dividend. Maybe I got to re-rate this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's okay. I think it's coming. It's just when.
Yeah. And Tim, the other thing I think is worth looking at is just the end market drivers as well, right? Because they're big. And for a while, the business was driven by the PC cycle. Then it was mobility layered on top of that. And now I think, as you know, there's so many applications that at our last analyst meeting in September, we were talking about artificial intelligence and the cloud and IoT and all of these things. And we talked to them as things that would be out way into the future, but those are pulling in. You look at the investments in 7 nanometers, you look at the new products that are being introduced by NVIDIA at Google, even at Apple, are being discussed these days. And those are really big chips. And if you compare the die sizes of those to what's going on inside a smartphone, it's multiple times that. And NVIDIA, for example, we were visited by Jensen from NVIDIA recently, and he said basically as big as they can make the die, that's how big they want it to be. So for our, you mentioned our growth in foundry, but in our logic business, we're uniquely a transistor company in terms of equipment. Those are really good for our business as well. So I think that's a good trend.
So the two red herrings, two red herrings for me the last 5 years are, hey, nobody can afford a new PC because the chip's too expensive and Moore's Law is coming to an end. That's too narrow a question. That's about how fast the PC is growing. Like, is there a payback on developing chips to have self-driving cars, healthcare diagnostics, Ubers, Airbnb, cell phones, big data? Yeah, there's a payback on that chip. We can sell those things. So if you look at it, it's going to be a proliferation of different devices. Sensors, ASIC chips, graphic processor units, general processors, DRAM, NAND. NAND's going to need the hard disk drives for power issues. So that's a red herring. I think it's a red herring, this whole Moore's Law thing. Because the broader issue is there a payback on investing in semi? Yeah, it's up to $40 billion every year. The second thing is, hey, your gross margins are going to go down. No, we're valuable. Our customers are valuable. Our gross margins are going to be okay.
China's the big driver of your story in terms of the CapEx. Can you maybe, I know there's, it's a bit of an opaque market and no one really knows where the, how long the CapEx levels will stay where they are, but could you maybe just give us some color around where they are today from a technology standpoint and where they need to be so that we can better measure?
So we got China's good, but it's not gigantic right now. And then if you look at it, there's spending in China by the domestic companies and then the multinationals. I'll focus more on the domestic, so the multinational is just moving factories, right? So the incremental is domestic. So domestic's down a little bit this year because they bought a bunch last year. We think it's up like $1.5 billion next year, and maybe another $1.5 billion the year after, because they got to ramp the technologies, hire people, and all that stuff. So I think it's nice, but it's not causing risk to the business. It's additive, and we do well there. But it's nice that it adds to WFE without being a risk that you have a big hangover because you spent too much. My opinion is 2020-21 could be bigger once you figure out the IP issues, right? But I think right now it's good and rational.
It's a long-term story.
Longer-term, it's big. It's going to be big. They're going to spend money. But right now it's in a good, rational state. Is it get bigger? Maybe.
Can they develop their own hardware companies?
It's harder.
Companies?
They're more focused on chips, too, because of, they import more chips than oil. It's a good job source and security issues. They want to secure supply chain. And it's actually harder to do equipment companies because the supply chain is so complicated. We help the chip companies. Our supply chain is very fragmented.
That's all the time we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.